At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Boxes were all filled with gifts, big and small. But sharing pure love is the greatest gift of all. Stay cozy, my people, and have a Boss year.
Get into the holiday spirit with Boss and our ultimate gifting edit. Visit your nearest store or explore our curated selection online at boss.com.
It's the only thing guaranteed besides taxes, but advances in medicine over the past 60 years have woken millions from eternal slumber. About 10% of those folks saw what they claim was the other side. Are their brains merely playing tricks on them, or is consciousness something more than the gray matter between our ears? This week's episode is Near-Death Experiences.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Well, I've been mainlining this dude's book, Bruce Grayson's book, for the past few days. And I love a scientist, man. I love somebody who's like, I don't know.
Yeah, this whole episode is giving me an existential crisis. So,
so hopefully, everybody.
It's fascinating. It's one of those things, like, maybe the only thing. Maybe not the only thing, but the biggest thing that until you've been there, you really can't say.
I feel like you
there's
can't
other
really
things
know.
That you're like, well, I just don't know how I'd react in that situation. But you might live to tell it how what happened exactly. When you were confronted with that choice.
Yes.
But for this, most people don't. Most people don't come back and tell you what happened.
No, and the ones that, and really until we'll talk about it, you know, the last 60 years or so, that just was not an option, really. I mean, a couple people survived, but I don't know that I would want to have to go through this to know that. You know, once you hear people talking about their experiences, mm-hmm. even, it's always the sandwich. Like, the before whatever happened, I was crushed by an insert whatever or fell off or whatever. And then on the other side of it of, and then I was in the hospital for 6 months or whatever, horrible stuff. But the part in the middle is fascinating. So if we could figure out, maybe there is a way to get to that part in the middle that does not involve falling from a high place or coding on a table during a surgery, like, call me. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, you lost me at coding because I was going to suggest the 90s classic Flatliners starring Kevin Bacon.
Hell yeah.
Those college kids also wanted to find out what happened and what happens when you bring someone back from the brink of death. Spoiler alert, didn't go great for them.
Yeah, but, don't try this at home.
They worked some things out. Yeah, don't try it at home or don't try it in what I think was like just a room at their college after hours.
They were like, we just need like an empty space and like a basically. Flat surface and let's mm-hmm. party. And don't do that, though.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I'm not trying to practice that way. I wish there was a machine or a mechanism or a simulation. I'm down for a simulation. I don't need the real deal.
A VR experience?
Yes.
Well, we're probably not too far off from that, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, though, we're going to bring you some real life accounts of people's NDEs.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. What happens when we die? Only those who have actually done it know for sure. But that hasn't stopped philosophers, religious scholars, scientists, and doctors, all destined to die themselves one day, from spending centuries exploring the experiences of those who have dipped a toe in the great beyond. One of the earliest written descriptions of what would be called a near-death experience, or NDE, today is known as the Myth of Ur in Plato's Republic, written around 380 BCE. It details the story of a soldier named Ur, who was killed in battle and revived 12 days later. In the afterlife, he saw judgment of the dead, the rewards or punishments they received, and the process of choosing a new life in a cycle of reincarnation. The account includes vivid descriptions of otherworldly landscapes, a sense of cosmic order, and a return to earthly life with a renewed sense of purpose. Nearly 2,400 years later, these themes continue to appear in modern reports of NDEs.
I had not heard of this myth until we were studying this, but I always find it so fascinating. It's like, we're just doing the same shit over and over because we can't know all this. Like, I can't know all the way back to 300 BCE, like what they were talking about.
I got some questions, and one of them is, how do you revive someone 12 days later?
12 days is a really long time, but I was, looking into, like, the medical advancements. The longest time I've seen has been 6 hours. That in 2011, and Japanese doctors reported a case of a woman found in a forest, and her heart had stopped the previous night, and they used advanced technology to circulate, like, blood and oxygen through her bodies, and she came back 6 hours later.
And that was in 2011?
Yeah.
Well, this was in BCE, so I'm going to assume they didn't have the same medical advancements.
No, and that's also, but still, to think you were dead for 6 hours. Yeah, I mean, I think with a myth, generally, they were like, for 12 days and 12 nights. And you're like, well, did you mean 12 hours? Like,
or 12 seconds or 12 minutes? Yeah. But it is interesting that even back then to today, the accounts of what is experienced pretty much remain the same.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest written medical description of a near-death experience was recovered in 2014. In northern France around 1740, military physician Pierre-Jean Dumanchot wrote of a pharmacist from Paris who fell unconscious and described seeing a light so pure and bright that he thought he must have been in heaven. Manchot speculated that an abundance of blood flowing to the brain possibly caused the man's experience. Aside from this account, not many other instances of NDEs were reported for over a century.
I mean, shout out for 1740 having a pretty good eyeball of a hypothesis. He wasn't like, well, perhaps the gremlins got in between his ears. You know, it was kind of like, yeah, probably blood. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we don't give enough credit to people from way back then and how intelligent they were. Like, a lot of things, yes, advancements have been made. But the intelligence that one is born with, perhaps, you know, I don't think that that's something that's just happened in the past 100 years or so.
No, I always want to go, like, if you and I could Bill and Ted ourselves in a phone booth situation, I would want to go visit all of the doctors, scientists, medicine people, whatever, who had said things like the guy we always talk about who was like, maybe we should wash our hands after touching a dead person before delivering a baby. And I just want to be like, you were right all along.
And also, listen to him. Yes. Don't question it. He's very right. In 1892, Albert Heim, an avid climber and geologist, began collecting accounts from fellow climbers who suffered severe falls and recovered. He set out to answer a question.
What are the sensations of someone suddenly suffering from a fatal accident in their last moments of life? People often have terrible ideas about this, imagining the utmost despair, the greatest pain, and the most terrible agony, and to try and read expressions of fears on faces of the dead. But it's not like that.
Heim found that mountaineers felt sensations that sounded very similar to one another. They described a review of their entire past, heard beautiful music, and
fell in a superbly blue heaven containing roseate cloudlets.
According to Heim, he added,
then consciousness was painlessly extinguished, usually at the moment of impact.
And also other folks that he interviewed and had, you know, accounts from said that they experienced time dilation, that they said it felt like an extreme slowing of time, that like they fell and they were able to think like tons of stuff in the time it took for them to fall. And an early student in Albert Heim's class was a guy named Albert Einstein, who called Heim's class, quote, magic. He's like, it was like, I'd never heard anything like this before. And then it was not very long after, months to less than a year or so afterwards, that he developed the theory of relativity, which is saying that time goes slower the faster you go. So it's just interesting that like somebody that we exalt as like the scientist was like, I'm intrigued.
This is the part of NDEs that starts to spike my blood pressure because I don't love the idea, and this is a common occurrence that people claim to have had, of like a review of your past, or you see and feel how everything you've done and said over your life made somebody else feel. You feel how they felt.
Yes.
I don't love that.
Yeah, it's extremely common that the vivid descriptions. One guy had gotten into a horrible fist fight during his life years before he had his NDE. And he said he was taken back vividly to that memory of a fist fight. And it was, he was driving, a guy stepped out in front of his car and he was pissed. He was having a bad day and he rolled his window and was like, "I'll fuck you up." And the guy's like, "I'll fuck you up." And he jumped out and they were beating each other's ass. He said he went through that. He said he remembered his feelings of anger, his ego. And then he said he felt that guy's feelings. And that guy was drunk because that guy's wife had died a year earlier. And he was drunk every day. And he lived in that bar because he had nothing to live for. And he was the person watching in horror. He said, "I felt this gut, like, what are those men doing to each other?" So that kind of instantaneous knowing of everyone's perspective. And we, you know, I think in the last 5, 10, 20 years, people are like, everyone's fighting a battle you know nothing about, and like, be compassionate and think about it. And it's like, think about it now, because they're about to make you think about it when you die, it sounds like.
And then you have a choice of, do you want to return or would you like to stay in this beautiful white light? Again, I don't like making decisions. One I also don't want to be faced with. There was not much further study on the phenomenon until medical advancements in resuscitation began bringing far more once-dead patients back from the brink to describe what happened to them. In 1975, the term near-death experience was popularized by physician and psychologist Dr. Raymond Moody in his best-selling book, Life After Life. Moody collected over 150 instances of these events, which he called NDEs for short. Each subject was unaware of the other's experiences, but they all described similar experiences, feelings that included
ineffable peace, joy beyond anything I had ever known, and the most sublime serenity one can imagine.
They also described out-of-body experiences in which they floated above their own lifeless human forms and watched the resuscitation efforts.
Yeah, this was an early interest in particularly cardiologists, because primarily it was their patients who were being revived by CPR, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, chest compressions, all that stuff. So then you're their doctor, and they're like, "What just happened to me?" And in a lot of cases, people that did not later get interviewed by more thoughtful doctors or willing to listen doctors were literally threatened, like, "If you keep talking like that, we're going to put you in a psych ward," which led to like isolation and depression of somebody that just wants to talk about what just happened.
Like so many things back then, especially with women. Like,
yeah,
if anything was not exactly how it, you know, societal norms, if something rubbed against, if something went against the grain, then people were locked up. She reads too much. She's hysterical. She thinks she saw God. Lock him up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Most patients also described a tunnel as if they were being pulled forward. Often they were accompanied or greeted by deceased loved ones, some faced what they felt was a panel of judgment or a single decision maker. All were given a choice to stay in this glowing place of light or return to their human forms. For various reasons, they all chose to return and relayed their experiences to Dr. Moody. His book made no declarations about the definitive existence of life after death, but merely posed the question, if all these individuals were merely hallucinating, why did they all go through the same events, report the same feelings, and include the same details?
It is weird, and everybody's not exactly the same. If anybody's interested in this, I cannot recommend After by Dr. Bruce Grayson enough. It's a soup. It's like 200-something pages, and he's just a good writer. He's a medical doctor, but he's done a ton of peer-reviewed studies, but distilled it down into like 3/4 of people think this, or half of patients this. So it's written in a really relatable way. So the tunnels is what's funny, is because people who live in America and developed areas often say tunnels. But people in other places that are less developed often say cave or well. And even one guy who was a trucker was like, felt like I was getting sucked through a long tailpipe. So it's like, it's almost like people just are grasping for words that can, that they can relate to.
Or it's the same thing, but everybody just says a different word, much like a god.
Yeah, exactly. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Then in 1991, Swiss-American psychiatrist and pioneer in near-death studies, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, published The Tunnel and the Light, describing her research into the phenomenon. Ross was known for developing the five stages of grief in her prior work, 1969's On Death and Dying. In her work, Ross encountered a patient who had been blinded in a laboratory explosion. Unconscious and injured, she left her physical body, floated above, and was later able to describe the scene before her, including the rescue workers on the scene who assisted with her recovery. When the woman was revived, she was completely blind, but still able to describe the rescue as it happened. Ross concluded that this is why so many of those brought back resent their recovery. The pain and limitations of their physical bodies were gone when they had been
in a far more gorgeous, more beautiful, and more perfect place.
Well, then you should stay there.
Why?
Given the choice.
A lot of them are not even given a choice. They describe being told, given two choices, like if you stay, this will happen. If you go, this will happen. Or being shown the future of their kids, of their family, or whatever.
Or being told it's not your time to go, yes, and you got to go back.
Yeah, or someone saying, no, I want to stay. Then oftentimes a loved one will show up and be like, hey, buddy, you actually got to go back. Just kind of depending, I'm guessing the ones that either choose it or who their family members like, come on, brother, that we don't hear about them because they are not alive to tell their stories back. But that the idea of these vertical experiences is what they're called, where people are seeing themselves. I thought it was fascinating that Dr. Grayson's like, oh, well, they're probably guessing. Like, you've seen ER, you've seen whatever. And they did studies between people who said they had near-death experiences and people who didn't. And the ones that did have them and claim these vertical experiences were spot on with no errors. 92% had zero errors. 6% had some error. 1% were like very error-ridden. But the people that didn't have NDEs and were resuscitated, they were like, tell me what you think your resuscitation was like. It was wrong. It was like, well, maybe you did this, maybe, so it's not just like, well, perhaps you could like hear it or you could see it. It's like things that you couldn't have known, essentially, like a stain on a doctor's tie hidden behind his coat the day that you were dead. And then the doctor speaking to you the next day with a new tie on and is like, yeah, you had a stain on your tie. And it's like, I never came in here when you were awake. How did you know I had a stain on my tie? That's weird.
And why are you looking at the backside of my tie?
Yeah, I was on the.
How are you getting back there?
Yeah, it was just that's what it happened to Dr. Grayson when he was an intern, and he was just like, "Well, now I have to look into that." And he's like, meanwhile, he's like a psychiatrist, and he's like, "Well, that's my nights and weekends." So I was like, "Yeah, that'd be me too." Just be like, "How'd you know about the spaghetti stain?"
Mm-hmm. The International Association for Near-Death Studies was created in 1981 to consolidate research. One of its founders, Bruce Grayson, developed the Grayson NDE scale in 1983, a factors test to determine whether someone had an NDE. The questions delve into the feelings of the experiencer, whether they felt joy, harmony with the universe, or peace. It also asks whether they felt separated from their body or saw deceased relatives greeting them, among other questions. The scale has 16 questions in all. A score of 7 or higher is considered an NDE for research purposes. The mean score among a large sample of near-death experiences is 15. However, the NDE scale is not a measure of how deeply an experiencer may be affected. It's simply a tool to make research more consistent.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You don't want to just say anybody that's claiming this. It's kind of like, we're looking for people that have had reasonably similar experiences so that we can actually compare data and not just, I felt like I was going through a tunnel, which can be an effect of certain anesthesia medicine.
Yeah. And also by this point, you've heard a lot of other people's stories too. So so it kind of muddies the waters of, is this something that you remember happening because you've heard other people talk about this is what happens to them, or was this a unique experience? Scientists across disciplines have been researching this phenomenon. Though each person's experience varies, as more data is gathered, common patterns have emerged. Dr. Yvonne Kaysen classified the experiences into 3 types: out of body, mystical, and distressing. These generally coordinate with Dr. Moody's 9 common steps of an NDE. Regardless of the experiences within them, he noted that most NDEs generally follow the same pattern. 1, a sudden peace and relief from pain. 2, perception of a relaxing sound or otherworldly music. 3, consciousness or spirit ascending above the person's body, sometimes remotely viewing medical professionals' attempts at resuscitation. 4, the person's spirit leaving the earthly realm and ascending rapidly through a tunnel of light in a universe of darkness, arriving at a brilliant, quote, heavenly place, being met by, quote, people of the light, who are usually deceased friends and family in a joyous reunion. 7, meeting with the deity that is often perceived as the religious culture would have perceived it, or as an intense mass emitting pure love and light. 8, in the presence of the deity, the person undergoes an instantaneous life review and understands how all the good and bad they have done has affected them and others. And 9, the person returns to their earthly body and life, because either they are told it is not their time to die, or they are given a choice and they return for the benefit of their family and loved ones.
I always think it's fascinating, and it was repeated over and over in Dr. Grayson's research, people's near-death experiences almost never comport with their professed beliefs about an afterlife. Like, Christians don't have what you would think would be like, and then I went and it was a throne of Jesus. They're kind of like, well, a person was there and he told me he was Jesus, and I think it was. Or they're like, my grandpa was there. Or they're like, a woman was there. You know, it doesn't, they don't go come back and go, well, I'm a Catholic and I've been a Catholic my whole life, and exactly what I thought would happen. It fucks them up because they're like, I was told that religion actually doesn't matter and that love is the only thing that matters. So,
so I'm going to go back on Sunday and see how that goes with all my fellow congregants.
Right. And in some cases, you know, they stay religious, or they're just like religious in a different way. And so I imagine it sort of rocks you that you're like, I'm a practicing insert whatever it is here. And then the repeated experience across religions and across cultures, regardless of kind of how you label it, is like the same message, which also comports with just like religious tradition of the golden rule. There's like a million different religions that have said that in cultures. And
what we've also heard, people that have encountered extraterrestrials or interdimensional beings have said that they receive a message that the main thing you need to worry about is doing kind unto others.
Yeah, between the Ariel School people, Chris Bledsoe, whatever, it's these the same, this oneness, unity, harmony, and caring, and which I think would also fit with a life review of like, if I am you and you are me, which is kind of what this message is, then yeah, if I hurt you later on, whether I feel it now or not, like I'm hurting myself.
Yeah. Yep.
That's crazy.
It's also a kind of a hard thing to wrap your head around, or at least when I was researching this, of loved ones that have died, what they experienced in that moment, and if they were given the opportunity to come back or not, and they chose not to, what that might mean. Specifically, I thought of my father a lot when researching this, like, or just anybody that, you know, I don't want anybody to think like, well, they didn't come back, so they must not have wanted to.
I was going to say, I think that the opportunity to come back is only in a resuscitatable person. I think, you know, if you fall off a mountainside and you hit the bottom, I think at some point this part, and I'm gesturing to my meat sack, my meat vessel, is like, there. Sometimes you don't get a chance to come back. You know what I mean? Depending on, you know, whatever has occurred to our physical bodies. So these people are all like in childbirth, in a heart surgery, in a controlled situation where it is possible to reverse, you know, whatever happened. But even I did not see, and it could be that it wasn't reported or whatever, the woman that was dead for like 6 hours, I don't even know that she had that. You know, it's only like 10% of people that even have this experience.
Yeah, it's a very small amount. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, that's a great question too. Just like, what were you in that scenario? But a lot of this stuff echoes Bob Monroe's Journeys Out of the Body book as well, just insofar as like what it looks like and how the experience feels. So
adults are not the only ones who have cheated death and lived to tell about it. Indeed, there are numerous accounts from children from as young as 4 years old that have experienced NDEs. The website, Dancing in the Dark, details a few of their stories, including a 9-year-old girl who had an NDE after surgery. She described encountering a beautiful, soft pink light that filled her with profound love and happiness. She felt light as a feather and observed her surroundings bathed in this radiant light, experiencing an overwhelming sense of peace and joy. She also said she heard her father say,
"What is she looking at?"
prior to being revived. These are interesting. This website's interesting because most of these accounts are from adults that many years after these experiences recount them. So you have to wonder, like, how much of this do you really remember? How much is, you know, kind of have you filled in along the ways? Or how much did you forget that maybe you're not even remembering?
That's a good point, too. Bruce Grayson did the, when he interviewed people in the 80s, he had this idea of like, well, did they just like make it up, or did they just remember it wrong? And he would interview them again in the like 2000s without telling them any details that he had gained, and was just like, tell me again about it. And he said they put electrodes on people's heads too, and that their stories were generally consistent, stayed almost exactly the same, and also that their brains produced the same waves as they would when they were recalling a memory versus when they were fabricating a lie, like being told to make up a fake story or whatever. So to the extent that at least George Costanza style, they believed it. Like, it's not, you know, even if they did make it up, it's like they physiologically believe it, but that's
they
a great
remember,
question.
Or they remember what they said,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Another account involves a four-year-old girl who fell down a flight of stairs. Years later, she reported an out-of-body experience where she saw herself lying face down on the cement floor. Despite the situation, she felt good and unafraid, describing a dim light growing brighter behind her, which she perceived as the most beautiful light imaginable. The child recalled,
I saw myself lying face down on the cement over to the side of the stairway. I was a little surprised, but not at all upset at seeing myself that way. I watched and saw that I didn't move at all. After a while, I said to myself, I guess I'm dead. But I felt good, better than I ever had. I realized I probably wouldn't be going back to my mother, but I wasn't afraid at all.
The young girl continued,
as I turned to face the light with my full body, I felt happier than I ever had before or have since. Then the light was gone. I felt groggy and sick with a terrible headache. I only wanted my mother and to stop my head from hurting.
Well, in that case, she was told, I suppose, it's not your time.
Yeah,
go back. On. And then immediately you feel the pain of falling down those stairs.
Uh-huh. And a lot of them were like, I saw my body and I didn't care about it. And then I was like, shouldn't I care? But I don't, which is like another interesting, they're just recounting like their feelings in the moment of like, I should be like upset. Although one lady did say, she said, I was in the ambulance. My body was in the ambulance. I watched it go. And she said that the paramedic looked, quote, disinterested and sort of bored. And she said, I thought to myself, well, he should be working harder. And then I thought, whatever. Like, it's wild. This
is my time. It's my time.
Yeah. But then her cousin showed up who had died previously and said, it's not your time. Go back, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I think I still might go, hey, I saw you in the back of the ambulance. And why don't you act like you give a shit next time? I was back there. Two of me was back there.
Just go to the HR hospital. Like, by the way, Bill, he's not doing his best, you know?
Some complaints. They're like, how do you know? And you're like, well, I was there. They're like, you were dead, though. Like, we measured that you were gone. Well, in a way, I was not, though.
Children's near-death experiences often feature simple and innocent narratives, reflecting their developmental stages and limited life experiences. Similarly, adults are more likely than children to share and discuss their NDEs, both publicly and privately. This sharing can be influenced by cultural norms and personal comfort levels regarding such experiences. At the age of 21, during a routine surgery, John J. Davis had an allergic reaction to anesthesia, leading to a near-death experience. He found himself in a marble temple-like building, guided by a spiritual presence he referred to as
Alan.
This guide led him through a magnificent orientation center for souls, bypassing the typical tunnel and light imagery common in many NDEs. John's experience reshaped his views on religion, providing him with a profound understanding that life on earth is merely a step in our soul's eternal journey.
Are you Jesus? No, I'm Alan. They're like, okay, let's go.
I have a friend named Alan, and I immediately thought, if he's who shows up when I go, you know what? Good for me, because he's great. And I would love for him to lead me through a marble temple-like building. He's also a realtor, so it would make sense that he did that.
He's like, I've got a fabulous new space for you up here in heaven. And you're like, what?
Tell me more.
Oh,
what's
my gosh.
The square footage?
Oh, my
he's
gosh.
Like, you don't need square footage, because it's just your soul.
That's
and
whatever.
You're not contained.
That's whatever you want. You can just make up whatever you want.
Anita Morjani suffered from terminal cancer when she slipped into a coma and had a near-death experience. During this time, she felt an overwhelming sense of love and clarity, realizing that her fears and self-imposed limitations had contributed to her illness. She encountered deceased loved ones and understood that her purpose was to live her life fearlessly. Miraculously, she regained consciousness and experienced a remarkable recovery, with her tumors shrinking rapidly. Anita's experience led her to share insights about self-love and healing.
It's good to come back with a purpose, even if it's a simple purpose of living fearlessly.
Yeah. I think even with people that haven't experienced NDEs, but have experienced like a terminal illness and in their waking life recover, have kind of a similar feeling of this, of like, I'm getting a second chance at life mm-hmm. and I'm going to make the most of it and turn things around.
Yeah, especially if you were you did not actually like make it to the end, like, you know, where you're blacked out on the table. Some of the research suggested that people that died on the table and did not have an NDE and versus the ones that did, when they came back, were resuscitated, they were high rates of PTSD, depression, anxiety, stress related, more of like a disconnected sort of lost feeling, which I can understand. You just fucking died and you didn't have any, like, if you did have guidance, you didn't remember it. So yeah. I don't know. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Renowned author and war correspondent Sebastian Junger suffered a ruptured artery in 2020, leading to a near-death experience. He described a profound sense of infinite emptiness during the emergency, often referred to as a void NDE. This feeling of nothingness was momentarily alleviated by an imagined appearance of his atheist father. This experience reshaped his perceptions, making him more appreciative of life and cautious, yet content with his choices. Junger's ordeal is detailed in his book, In My Time of Dying, where he explores the deeper psychological and spiritual implications of facing one's mortality.
The scary parts, yeah, they're not all happy ones. Some of them, people have, when they go back, they go out, they get die, come back, they still have those memories. And they're like, I was sliding down a tunnel and I fell in the bottom of like a cave. It was dark. It was black. It was nothingness. Somebody appeared, a voice appeared or not. But those folks aren't like, it made me think of Miss Rafferty on SNL where she's like, well, that's not the experience I had with Kate McKinnon talking about the aliens. And everyone's like, I was wrapped in a blanket of light. And it's like, I fell down the bottom of a fucking well. Like, it sucked.
I don't think they're not all beautiful light, rainbows, and unicorns. And perhaps that has something to do with how you lived your life before, or just maybe not everybody experiences the same thing. In both children and adults, cultural beliefs significantly shape the interpretation and narrative structure of NDEs. While certain elements, such as out-of-body experiences and encounters with light, are reported globally, the specific details and interpretations are often influenced by cultural and religious contexts. For instance, individuals may perceive spiritual beings in forms consistent with their religious backgrounds. NDEs are often marked by profound changes in the individual's physiological, psychological, emotional, and social dimensions. Many NDE survivors report enhanced sensitivity to light, sound, and other sensory stimuli, which can sometimes lead to discomfort in everyday environments. Some even describe changes in their immune system, such as an improved ability to resist illness. Reports of altered brain activity following NDEs, including increased alpha wave patterns, have also been documented. In rare instances, individuals exhibit unexplained physical recoveries or develop newfound abilities. Many NDE survivors describe feeling a heightened sense of energy, yet paradoxically require more rest, suggesting a significant shift in how their bodies regulate and manage energy. Maybe this is why I'm so tired all the time. Maybe
traveling to realms.
Had a NDE and I don't know it, or I shifted timelines at some point, but now I'm trying to get all that energy back from the other one.
You're like, I will rise like a phoenix.
One of the most universally reported outcomes of NDE experiencers is a diminished fear of death and a profound sense of peace about life and the afterlife. Even those who were previously non-religious often experience a deepened connection to spirituality, though this does not always align with organized religion. Survivors often feel an intense connection to others, becoming more compassionate and emotionally attuned. Many experiencers emerge with a clearer sense of life's purpose, often focused on love, connection, or service.
And it's fascinating the marked changes in personality. One guy was a police officer and had an NDE during surgery and said he had to quit his job afterwards because he was in a situation where he needed to fire his service weapon at a suspect and he endangered himself and his partner because he said, I could not shoot another human. I just couldn't do it. And another guy was in the military. He described himself as like a schoolyard bully, rough, mean, tumbled. And he said he could not hurt a fly afterwards, that it's like, you become aware of the humanity and the life within everybody. And the best one was the guy that was normally people would call him a pimp, but he was running a trafficking organization for organized, like the mafia, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he said, I was just like, scrape him off. Who gives a shit, before I had this happen to me. And afterwards he quit. He became, he worked with like underprivileged youth and survivors of domestic abuse. And he just said that like, I became so sensitive and aware of other people's pain. I literally will just cry when other people are hurting. And all I want to do every day is to try to just alleviate people's pain.
Like, same, buddy. I also cry a lot because of other people's pain, which I think is one reason this topic got to me, is because there is so much emotion and pain and involved with it. It's almost like if we could all figure out how to access this, then maybe we'd all treat each other better without having to flatline on a table somewhere.
Exactly. I'm telling you, we got to figure out the simulation experiment.
For some survivors, feelings of isolation and alienation accompanied their NDE, often feeling misunderstood by others after their experience. Support groups or organizations, such as the International Association for Near-Death Studies, provide safe spaces for sharing and understanding these profound experiences.
Yeah, before that organization, people would just sort of suffer in silence. A lot of times their therapists couldn't really help them, that their spouses, a lot of people ended up divorcing their spouses because I believe it was Mickey's significant other was like, you don't like the same things as me anymore. Like, you don't like cars and money and jewelry anymore. You just want to like go around helping everybody all the time. And he was like... Yes, I'm sorry.
Loser.
I guess we're breaking up. But meeting other people in support groups are like, yeah, man, me too.
It reminds me kind of the experiences the astronauts have.
Yeah.
Knowing that there's a bigger thing to the universe, coming back and being like, well, that really fucked me up. And I don't have anybody that can relate to this except my fellow astronauts. And there's only a handful of them left. So I think it can be very eye-opening and profound and life-changing. I could also see how one would feel kind of isolated and alone and like, I don't have anybody to talk to this about. So like with anything, support groups are great for those, because you get a bunch of people around that know exactly what you went through and how you feel. And then I imagine that it makes it a lot easier to cope with.
No, I definitely agree. It's something about not being the only one in the room with something. So I'm sure earth-shattering, you probably feel like the carpet got ripped out from under you.
Or like you've come back with superhero powers and all of a sudden you can do shit you couldn't before and all your illnesses are cured. You're like,
I can heal people?
Oh, what? Man, I'm magic now. That would be cool.
I'm down with that.
NDEs share common elements across religions and cultures, suggesting a universal framework for how humans experience and interpret these phenomena. Common features often include feelings of peace, out-of-body experiences, a bright light, a sense of cosmic unity, and encounters with divine or spiritual beings. These characteristics are shared by experiencers across various belief systems, implying that NDEs are not confined to a single religious tradition. Most commonly, individuals report a life review or a transformative sense of interconnectedness that aligns with ethical teachings, such as the Golden Rule, found in many spiritual philosophies.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. Like, I think it was like 2/3 of them said they could not identify the deity-like being that was around. And then 1/3 identified them as something consistent with their religious beliefs or like their general spirituality. But that almost all, pretty much all of them, universally mentioned some version of the golden rule, or that we're supposed to treat people, and that overall they were not like, oh, this is a religious choice. They were like, this is the natural order of the world. And this, the life review is not meant as a punishment whatsoever. It's as an explanation of like, this is the natural,
a teaching moment, perhaps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes you wonder if in the original versions of the Bible and stuff, the golden rule, like if that was relayed by someone that had an experience like this and it just happened to evolve into Christianity. However, I think it's all just how everybody should treat everybody. And yeah, the other stuff with religion messed it all up.
Yeah, I thought that because I was like, at no point does anybody come back from an NDE and go, and they said I need a tithe 10% to the church. And
or they said I have trans to do- people don't have rights.
Yeah, none of that. I mean, in fact, it's the opposite, mm-hmm, opposite. But I was not aware of how ubiquitous the golden rule was across ancient Egypt, Greece, the Christian Bible, Babylonian Talmud, the Muslim Quran, like Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism. Like it is, like you said, it's just like the, it is like that
common
is,
sense kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, right.
When you think about it. It should be common sense, at least.
Yeah, some people, apparently, you got to go to the other side and come back as a messenger.
While there are some common similarities, there are also significant differences in NDE narratives that differ based on religious and cultural backgrounds. Christians often interpret the commonly seen bright light as Jesus or an angel, whereas Hindus may perceive it as a deity like Krishna. The concept of a life review may be seen as karmic justice in Hinduism and Buddhism, while Christians view it as divine judgment. Some traditions, like Tibetan Buddhism, interpret NDEs as mind-generated visions rather than literal encounters. These variations highlight the role of pre-existing beliefs and cultural frameworks in shaping how individuals interpret their NDEs.
But it's interesting, even the Christian ones, the heart, like I said, a Catholic, which people joke, like, I'm riddled with guilt and I'm so judged and stuff. But they say when they're in their life reviews that they don't feel like they're being told, like, you are bad, you are being punished, that it's given to them almost as like a revelation. And they're like, oh, when I do that, you know, that has an impact or whatever. So it is interesting that it's like divine judgment, but they don't feel like punished for it. It's almost like they're just informed.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if you're trying to control people like a church, you need to be like, there's a threat.
No, for sure. Religion aside, science struggles to explain what happens to the brain in an NDE or out-of-body experience. An article published in Frontiers in Psychology hypothesized that NDEs may emerge as a hallucination-like phenomena from a brain in altered states of consciousness. While this theory is largely theoretical and lacks empirical support, some believe that those altered states of consciousness potentially allow access to different dimensions of reality similar to the brain in states of deep meditation or chemical alteration with substances like DMT.
And apparently ketamine is the closest to NDEs as far as like descriptions of people on psychedelic drugs and the language used versus descriptions of people with NDEs. So fascinating. I wonder why.
I will never do DMT because I've heard so many horror stories. Ketamine, though, I've been thinking about just mm-hmm. for my own stuff. So a lot of people do report feelings of euphoria, mm-hmm. but
and floating.
Those feelings can also be reported after you take a bunch of Molly. So, you know, any type of euphoric type drug, there's some good that comes along with it before the bad hits.
Yeah, DMT, any of those videos scare the shit out of me. Talking about beings and stuff. And then they go back later and they're like, you're back. And I'm like, I'm not trying to have a hallucination that recognizes me.
I don't want to take any drug that makes me feel like I'm dying.
No.
The concept of quantum immortality has gained traction in online spaces where some users report feeling like they narrowly avoided imminent death only to be transported to safety somewhere far away. Many experiencers report feeling like they switched timelines and noted small changes in their reality not present before the near miss. This idea has been linked to NDEs, suggesting that such experiences might result from transitions between these parallel universes. An article in the Journal of Near-Death Studies explores a quantum biomechanical basis for NDEs, proposing that quantum processes could underlie the life reviews reported during these experiences.
I don't understand enough about quantum, but I know that Google just developed a quantum computer that can do calculations like that would take the fastest current computer, which we talked about in the NSA episode, that would take that computer 10 quadrillion years, this can do it like immediately. So that's crazy. So I wonder what, I'm like, ask that, thing. It'll know what it knows. True.
Why don't we ask ChatGPT? It produces information very quickly. It seems to know everything.
They called it Willow, which I was like, nice Taylor Swift reference.
Oh, I'm wearing a Willow bracelet right now. The switch timelines thing is interesting. I know a lot of people that are like, well, I was in this car accident and I survived, myself included. And then now I'm like, was I almost dead at that time? I don't think I was, because I remember being completely conscious at the time. However, I do have that feeling of things like being the same, but a bit different all the time. Or like I'm repeating the same sequence of events in the same like order and time. But a lot of it really is like, this time last year, this exact conversation happened. Why is that? Like, is it just that it got brought back around due to the time of the year? Or is it getting brought back around because something needed to change from the last time it was discussed? That's something I think about quite a bit.
Definitely. And I think you are not alone. Insofar as like comments online of people going, no, you know, I had this surgery that didn't go well and I woke up from it and I felt different or whatever. So not really as widely reported in NDE literature, but very widely expressed in online circles for sure. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Medical professionals and psychologists suggest that NDEs may stem from brain and body responses during critical events, such as oxygen deprivation or the release of neurochemicals like endorphins and serotonin, which can induce euphoria, altered perception, and vivid experiences. Studies have shown bursts of electrical activity in the brain during cardiac arrest, linked to heightened states of consciousness even after clinical death. However, these physiological explanations fail to fully account for subjective reports like out-of-body experiences or encounters with deceased individuals, highlighting the limitations of current medical models. For example, research published last year in Neuroscience News identifies brainwave activity during the, quote, wave of death, but acknowledges gaps in understanding subjective aspects of NDEs, such as being able to accurately describe details of rescue efforts, even while unconscious.
Those are the things that kind of, the being able to describe your rescue efforts, and also meeting people during the NDE and coming back and saying, oh, I met with so-and-so, and then finding out that during the time of your NDE, that unbeknownst to you, that person had died. And so, you know, Mary is my friend. I haven't talked to her in 6 months. I went under... and I died and I was revived. But while I was dead, Mary came to me and said, hey, friend, it's good to see you. Tell my parents I'm sorry. And then when I wake up, I'm like, well, I better call Mary. And when I call them, they're like, Mary died, you know, last night in a car accident or whatever. And you're like, okay. And so those are the catalog demonstrable incidents of that is what Dr. Bruce Grayson just goes, I don't know what to do with that. He's like, I can tell you that it happened. I can tell you that we double checked them and that what they said was true. I can't tell you how they knew that. And it,
gotta
he's
put
like,
it in the box of IDK. Yeah, it's just labeled like, IDK.
And I appreciate that as a doctor too, going, we got to look into it. We're not going to find out the why, but we got to write this stuff down.
That's the thing is with all the psychologists, doctors, scientists studying it, is it something that can ever really be known?
Yeah, when he said the dirty secret of neuroscience is that we have no idea how a physical event like electrical current or a chemical change in a nerve cell can produce consciousness. And I was like, but you're the doctors.
Doctors are wrong all the time. And like, they're just people at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Despite the lived experience of the estimated 800 million people who have experienced NDEs, some skeptics remain. For instance, psychologist Susan Blackmore argues that NDEs are constructed from the brain's attempt to make sense of unusual physiological conditions during critical situations. Although these explanations account for many reported features of NDEs, they do not fully explain all aspects, such as veridical perceptions reported during unconsciousness. Without a full answer either way, the debate continues, with skeptics emphasizing naturalistic explanations and others considering the possibility of phenomena beyond current scientific understanding.
I do appreciate that about researchers in this field. The extreme skeptics that are just like, nuh-uh, it's impossible, none of it's real, are very small. And the extreme, everything is totally real, it's proof of God, is really small. And a majority of them are all in between, who kind of just go, we can't really just pretend like this isn't happening. That's the opposite of science. We just need to gather data, and work on hypotheses until we figure something out. So I think Blackmore is an outlier, just insofar as it's a smaller group of like pure skeptics of there's absolutely nothing else here happening versus we got to figure out what the fuck is happening.
I definitely in the middle.
Yeah.
I'm not a 100% skeptic. I know that I don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
I also haven't experienced one of these, so I can't speak to it.
Mm-hmm,
100% right. Until I do, which hopefully I don't.
Right.
Or, you know, if I come back and I'm cool, maybe that would be cool. But it all depends on the situation of how did I get to the NDE in the first place?
Yeah. How did I get here? Yeah. What kind of meat sack am I going back to?
Yeah. I might choose to stay.
I'm cool, man. I'll find ways to communicate other ways. Like, don't worry about it.
Although, if they were like, you can go back because here's how your children grow up, I'd be like, put me back. I'm in a wheelchair for the rest of my life. That's cool.
That's what one of the women who was, she had three kids and she quoted on the during a C-section. And she said, she was like, oh my gosh, I felt so great. But then she said, I was told by what I think was like her grandma or looked like her grandma, but wasn't. It's like a dream where you're like, I think it was grandma, was kind of like, here's these like visions of the future. And she said, I could tell. Oh, those are my three current kids grown up, and that's the baby. And she was just like, I gotta go see the baby. And they were like, yeah, well, you were always supposed to go back. Good choice. I was like,
you made the right choice. In 2014, a 24-year-old woman, referred to as Patient One, became the focus of NDE research. After collapsing from cardiac arrest and spending 3 days in a coma at the University of Michigan, her family decided to withdraw life support. Upon cessation of oxygen and removal of her breathing tube, researchers observed a surge in gamma brainwave activity. Previously quiet regions suddenly produced high-frequency gamma waves, particularly in areas known as the
hot zone
for consciousness. Some signals lasted over 6 minutes, while others spiked to levels 11 to 12 times higher than during life support. During this time, different regions of patient one's brain demonstrated heightened communication. These connections, most pronounced immediately after oxygen was cut, persisted for nearly 4 minutes and reemerged over 5 minutes later.
The gamma waves is interesting because I think gamma waves are present in extremely deep meditative states, mm-hmm. in synced brain hemispheres, like in HemiSync with Bob Monroe and Out of the Body, and in use of certain psychedelics. So I was like, there's some going on with these gamma waves. I don't know what it is, but
what's weird is the amount of psychedelics I've done and none of this has happened to me kind of pisses me off. Why haven't I been chosen to ever have something like this happen? I've never done like DMT though, so maybe that's the link. Dr. Hemo Borjigin, a professor of neurology at the University of Michigan, is the one who conducted the test. Notably, areas of patient one's brain tied to conscious experience, vivid dreaming, memory formation, and empathy were interacting in ways resembling waking life. Even as she approached death, her brain's activity suggested a complex, lifelike state occurring over several extraordinary minutes. Sadly, patient one did not recover, so no one can prove that the readings in her dying brain were accompanied by an NDE. Dr. Grayson, co-founder of IANS, believes that the data is less relevant given that her heart had not fully flatlined when the activity was measured, meaning that although patient one was dying during the scans, she was not fully dead like other subjects of Grayson's research.
Which, that's a great question. Like, the other subjects of his research that did die, did their the memories that they have of what happened happen in those moments before they fully flatlined versus... in this case, it was measured as she was flatlining and then it ceased after she died.
They got to get that machine that can read your brainwaves for dreams and hook it up and see what you're seeing during those moments.
Just leave them on. It is my understanding that in many cardiology wings in hospitals, not many, but in an emerging number of them, they are investing in things like that, that if someone is coding, they'll stick one of those on their head because they're like, well, either way, we'll get good data.
It's fascinating, interesting, helpful for, scientific advancements, sure, to know any of that. Advancements in artificial intelligence are revolutionizing the analysis of brain scans and data, providing unprecedented insights into near-death experiences. AI algorithms can process vast amounts of data from imaging techniques like EEG and fMRI, identifying patterns and anomalies with precision that surpasses traditional methods. For NDE research, this technology could analyze the neural correlates of consciousness during critical moments, such as the gamma wave surges observed in patient one. By mapping these complex brain activities, AI could help uncover how various regions interact during altered states of consciousness, providing clues about memory formation, empathy, and sensory perception near death. Predictive modeling powered by AI could move the field even further, enhancing researchers' ability to differentiate between biological processes and potential metaphysical phenomena, deepening our understanding of what occurs in the brain during life's final moments. This is interesting because AI, when you start to talk about AI with it, and then you think, well, there's, the theories of simulation, but then you mix it with NDEs, I kind of usually in my head think of a simulation like a video game or we're all Sims. So what if it's all the same though? And like, it's just like if your character dies in a video game, you can choose to like send them back through, or maybe you turn the game off, or maybe they go to a different part in the game. So if you're like you as the player or they as the beings of the universe kind of are the ones in that seat, if it's all kind of the same thing but just different language.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think the book on simulation theory I read was January of like 2021, when we talked about like transhumanism and like continuing on and stuff. And I think when you hear simulation, people do, like, you're right. You think like, oh, like we're the Sims, like a computer program. Well, then what human is controlling the computer program? And what a lot of folks here have said is that it's not really like humanity. It's it's like this consciousness where they can see when their eyes have been blinded, their body's eyes have been blinded because they don't need eyes, because it's an instantaneous knowing of like just that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Like telepathy. It's the same we talk about like the aerial school or a lot of people that have encountered like extraterrestrials, whatever you want to call them, of having just like that knowing in your head of someone talking to you or communicating something to you. People that have felt like loved ones visit them in dreams kind of have said the same thing. So yeah, like you don't have to hear something necessarily. It's more of like a feeling. And when you die, if you're shown all of those feelings that both you felt and everyone you've ever encountered have felt, and then you realize, like you said, it's all one. Good luck with all that, you guys.
it's wild because, for the last, since the transhumanism episode, a little bit before that, I've been practicing my Buddhism and there's so much in it that's like verbatim the same stuff that I hear when I read about near-death experiences that is verbatim when I hear. And that's not to say it's right. I think it's just, like you said, different names for the same thing that we're all kind of grasping around in the dark. And someone who went through this said, it feels like you're walking home and it's pitch dark out at nighttime and it's raining, and that all you have is a flashlight, and that there is a huge lightning surge that sort of turns the lights on, and that you see all around you for a second, and then the lightning is over, and then it's dark again, and all you've got is that flashlight. You still remember what you saw when the lightning was flashed. You may not be able to see it, but it's like that kind of all knowing of like what we're traversing through, of like, there's something in the darkness. You just can't know what it is, but it's the same. It's similar to people, like I said, who's had psilocybin trips or this the telepathy tapes. I cannot recommend that podcast enough. But in these instances where you have non-speaking autistic children whose parents are like, I'm fucked up about this because my kid can read my mind. Mm-hmm. And it's the kids explaining, oh, I go to this beautiful place and there's beings who say we're all one and there's infinite knowledge and da da da. And you're just like, well, everybody's singing the same song. It just sounds a little different.
Like Bashar, he claims to have a being that, you know, he speaks through him and it's all the same message too.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless if he's a scam artist or not, at least he's spreading messages of love and hope.
It's true. But it's what he says is almost verbatim what the Ariel School kids said.
Yeah. The greater question is, what happens in our human life to change all of that? If we come into this world made of pure love and this consciousness that knows no hate or judgment, you're taught that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 100%. At some point, your family, your teachers, just society, like warps you and takes away that innate knowing that we are all one and we should treat each other with compassion and we're where we are now. You know what I mean? So like, it's interesting why that was introduced. Like how did that, who was the first person to introduce that?
Yeah, just like being mean to somebody, excluding hate. Somebody.
Or just
picking out an extra, you know, you don't fit this.
Exactly.
It's funny to me because I feel like a lot of our better parts of us is our consciousness and the worst parts of us is our brain. Our brain is our monkey brain. It's like mean, mine, give me, I want, take for myself, going, well, maybe I should share with my fellow man. So why is our brain, and it is, separate from our consciousness? And that's what the straight up neuroscientists would be like, we don't know, man. We don't know how they work together.
We didn't make any of us. So, well, kind of, but not really. Yeah. So it's, I think some things we just can't really know. We can have really good guesses and research. But until we all see that bright light, what choice are you going to make? And like, how does it resonate with you?
Mm-hmm. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back.
Armed with this new technology, Dr. Borjan and others like him are continuing the research. He told The Guardian earlier this year,
I believe what we found is only the tip of a vast iceberg. What's still beneath the surface is a full account of how dying actually takes place, because there's something happening in there, in the brain, that makes no sense.
Dr. Sam Parnia, the world-renowned resuscitation expert, agreed that the field is still emerging, saying,
I think in 50 or 100 years' time, we will have discovered the entity that is consciousness. It will be taken for granted that it wasn't produced by the brain, and it doesn't die when you die.
Much like people think that if other life was to come to Earth, that's kind of what would happen. We'd have this like revelation of what's really going on. 50 or 100 years. Hopefully it's sooner than that.
Hopefully it's only 50. So I'm only 88. And then it'll be like, right, I can make it. The other
right
day
at
I
the
go,
end,
you figure, I go, I got to.
You got to know right before you kick it though, right?
Yeah, then let me know. I go, I got to take care of my body. I might be around another 50 or 75 years. And I said, yeah, I'm going to live to be 113. Watch me. Fucking watch me.
Well, so what do we think?
Man, I think, you know, it's like two things. Regardless of if it is like a flood of chemicals and it's just a feel-good thing, the people to whom it happened, it's so real.
For
and
sure.
Dr. Grayson, I think, has been very moved by his work insofar as like the demonstrable psychological harm. I mean, he's a psychiatrist, not a psychologist, but the demonstrable psychological harm that befalls people who, not just that you died on the table and came back, but that you died on the table, you had this very real thing happen to you that the words people use over and over, like, it was realer than real, it was realer than memory, I don't even have words for it, I just knew, I did it. To have that just extreme, deeply held belief, and to be told by your family, your loved ones, your doctors, nuh-uh, and if you keep talking about it, we're going to lock you up. It hurts them. It hurts their health.
Sure.
It hurts their quality of life. So he's kind of developed a three-step process. It's like, you don't have to tell them, yes, everything you had happened to you is true, but it's like, listen to them without, we listen and we don't judge. And also, like, don't try to pull more information out of them. Just let them know and maybe probe them of like how things made them feel, but not going instantaneously, no, that never happened or whatever, because it really does upset them. But also almost all of them come back with pretty good, you know, positive improvements.
They're making changes. I think that could be applied to a lot of things. Believing people when they, you know, and validating their lived experience. Any survivors of any type of abuse, you know, like believe women. If you tell them, no, that didn't happen, it also physiologically and emotionally affects them. For anyone to be told, no, you're lying. That didn't happen to you. And you're like, no, I know it did. That's shitty all around. And no matter what we're talking about.
And it correlates to like longer recovery periods of people, that, you know, because you're depressed, honestly. Yeah. But I do think from a just a consistency of experience, none of the accounts I read, and again, I cannot recommend the book After enough. It was so good. Really struck me as like, none of these people wanted this to happen and nobody was like stoked that it happened. Like most of them, it takes a while for them to even share it, or they mention it and like, I'm dealing with some depression, and that's when he would get called in and stuff like that. So I think every one of these people was running around selling their life story and making money off of it, then you could be a little bit more, I would feel more like, all right, what are you trying to, why are you telling me this? But for the most part, they just live quiet, you know, sort of put your head down and go, I got to help as many people as possible. That's my edict. I don't give a shit about money. I'm not trying, material things don't really excite me anymore. I just want to love as many people as I can love. And that we need more folks like that regardless. Yeah. But if that's the golden rule, it turns out, you know, people that have been there, I've never died. Folks that have died quite literally are telling us what we've told, you know, learned in kindergarten, right? Like treat others as you want to be treated. Like maybe listen to those folks. They know something we don't.
Truly. Yeah. I'm of the belief that I don't know. I'm smart enough to know that I don't know a whole lot.
For sure.
I'm not going to invalidate somebody's lived experience. I'm always open to learning and listening and, you know, expanding my mind and beliefs. I think it's fascinating. And I think that 800 million people is a lot of people to have experienced this. So, yeah.
Yeah.
If they're all saying the same thing. And, you know, that's not to say I ran across several websites where it's clearly snake oil and people saying this happened to me because they do want to write a book or something about it. But just like with alien encounters, it's the same thing. But the aerial school phenomena children, none of them wanted that to happen. Mm-mm. None of them grew up to like, you know, most of them were depressed and didn't want to talk about it because they weren't believed. So I think that does show a lot of, credit in situations like this when nobody is trying to like benefit financially. They just want to help others after something like this happens.
Yeah. They're like, please don't tell anybody my address because I don't want to answer a bunch of questions. Right. Like, don't give anybody my phone number. But the best quote was this woman who said, she was shown like the, you know, the truth or whatever. And she said, I was shown that religions are like jars of jelly on a shelf, only each jar had a different label put there by man. It's all sweet. There are many paths to the mountain to reach, you know, God, unity, whatever. And it really doesn't matter which one you take, because when you get there to that mountaintop, it's all the same love, light, peace, harmony, gratitude, wisdom, truth, and victory for everybody. There are no religions in heaven, just jelly. And I was like, I love that concept of like, we've all got our own little jars, and it's like, well, my jar says this on it and yours says this on it, but it's the same thing. It's just a little, you know, it's still sweet, but it's a little made out of something different, but it gets you there. It still goes on your toast.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've thought that about religions or organized religions for a long time. It's everyone saying the same thing just in different ways, but because they don't completely align. I mean, wars are fought over it. People, you know, die because of these ingrained religious beliefs that go against the golden rule and all these things that these people say they experience.
Oh, definitely. It's when you hear that you got to relive it again, it makes you consider how you live.
For sure. If you think one day I'm going to have to feel how I've made everybody else in my life feel, good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's impactful.
Yeah.
That I think is, of all NDE stuff, the most impactful for me personally to take away, because I know I've hurt people in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know what, you know, to feel how they felt in that moment is very powerful,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, try to walk a mile in somebody's shoes, put yourself in their position to understand it. It's kind of the same concept of like, imagine how you would feel in that if you were them.
Mm-hmm.
Would you want somebody treating you that way or talking to you that way? And if the answer is no, then probably don't do it.
Don't do it. It's the root of that compassion. Well, I'm fascinated to hear what our listeners have to say. If mm-hmm. like anybody has had an NDE, you feel comfortable with sharing on Freaky Friday, we'd love yeah. to share that. If you all, if anybody else, this is a call for my own sanity, just very briefly, and this is the end of it, have listened to the Telepathy Tapes podcast, read Bob Monroe's books and or listen to our episode, and then read this after book, I don't know, holler at me on Instagram or something, because there's too many similarities and it's freaking me out, especially if you're a neuroscientist or something.
Why is it freaking you out?
There's
wouldn't it be make sense that there's similarities?
It does. It's freaking me out insofar as like, it's like, does that mean it's true? Like, it's just,
well,
too
that's
many
anything.
Independent. It's just like the independent descriptions of like impossible for this kid in this place to know what this person had happened. And they're just describing the same thing. It's fucking me up, man.
Well,
and UFO yeah. of God by Chris Bledsoe. That's the other one. That's wild. So I need like a tinfoil hat book club or something, because I'm losing it.
Well, maybe they're all right. Or yeah. there's something to be said if everyone's reporting the same thing. I mean, I think that's like with any research, when you have multiple sources saying the same thing, then there's more likelihood that it's true.
I guess that's fair. Well, thank you. That makes me feel better. Thank you very much.
If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next, or dive into over 900 hours of various segments. You can also gift a subscription now.
We made it so easy. If you go to Sinisterhood, or you go to patreon.com/sinisterhood /gift, and I'll also put a link on our main website as well. If you just right when you go to sinisterhood.com, there's a big banner. Just click that big thing. It makes it easy for you. And in the past, to gift a subscription, it was like a whole deal.
It was a whole thing.
Now Patreon has streamlined it, so it's super easy. It's the gift that keeps on giving, and it's the gift you know that they don't have, I guess, unless they're a Patreon member already. But
you could also always renew it.
That's true. Renew them a subscription. If you're not sure what it's like, what it's about, if you're person would like it, if you would like it, we have free trials. You can join for free for a week at any level, check out all the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial's over without getting charged. But if you're going to gift a subscription or sign up for yourself, make sure you do that annual so you can get 1 month free. And what do you get mm-hmm. when you join?
Oh, you get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As. We just had one the other night. You can watch that on the replay along with all the past Q&As, even if you didn't catch it at the live stream. We do quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, and just for signing up as a free member for our Patreon, we give you a once a month bonus audio content just to say thank you. Monthly minisodes, merch discounts, and most importantly, a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
As you listen to this tomorrow night, you have an opportunity to join us for Hallmark After Dark, our movie snarking live stream. Head over to our YouTube channel at 8 p.m. Central and watch. We'll explain how it works, sync up the movie. Probably it will be on Netflix. It's likely going to be Hot Frosty. That's what's in the lead.
Which everyone says is legitimately yeah. good, and I'm low-key excited to see it.
Let's do it. I can't wait. So head over to youtube.com/sinisterhoodpodcast at 8 p.m. Central on December 19th to let the roasting begin.
To look at those abs. And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, and make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Well, speaking of the most amazing gifts for the season, go to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, tote stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And we have merch discounts for people who already have Patreon, so be sure to check the pin post to get your merch discount code.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod and like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. You can watch the Hallmark After Dark live stream as well as full video versions of our Wednesday episodes on YouTube. They're ad-free on Patreon. And you can watch clips of the show on TikTok. To order the Christmas gift that you know they don't have, go to cameo.com and order your custom Sinisterhood video shout out. Christy and I will say happy Christmas, a merry new year.
Yes, let us know if you want us to do an accent based on where because some, you know, UK, they say Happy Christmas.
Yes.
Here we say Merry Christmas. It's like this whole episode. We're saying the same shit, just in different ways.
Exactly. It's glad season tidings or whatever this Yule season. But let us know at cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you on the internet?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Anna SG,
Iris B,
Fern Music,
Megan Myers,
Elise,
Kayla Ditto,
Holly,
Sarah Gaither,
Caitlin D'Analfo,
Carrie Ann Kirkwood,
and Jake.
Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you all. We sincerely, sincerely appreciate it. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.